Way down in Missouri, where I heard this melody. When I
welcome to Show Me Missouri, the history of Missouri, one county at a time. We are in Shelby County this week, right here in downtown Shelbina, here at the Historical Society, one of the absolute best historical societies you're ever going to see. If you're coming down the highway, come in and check it out. Shelby County was formed January 2nd, 1835. It was the 48th county in the state of Missouri. Now 502 square miles. Interesting stories about how the history of it unfolded and how it came to be. And we are very fortunate today to be joined by Glenn Egan, the presiding commissioner of Shelby County. Commissioner, thank you for joining us.
Glad to be here.
Kathleen Wilhelm, the president of the Historical Society, thank you for having us in the hospitality here.
Thank you.
I walked in here. I've been to several of these now. I couldn't believe how organized this place is. Holy cow. How long did this take you to get this kind of organization done?
Well, let's see. We moved in and had an open house the 22nd of July. So we moved pretty fast.
You've been doing some work here.
Yeah.
And Wendy Brumbaugh, the Shelby County Economic Development Director, thank you for joining us.
Thank you.
Always like to start off the top thanking our sponsors, the Missouri Association of Electric Co-ops, CFM Insurance, Missouri Association of Counties, and Farm Bureau lets us come to counties every week like this here in Shelby County. So interesting, right out of the gate, there's a little bit of a wrinkle in Shelby County. It seems like Shelby County is very tied in and very close to some of its neighboring counties, and its history is very intertwined with other counties in northeast Missouri. And I see here you have history not just from Shelby County, but you have a lot of Monroe County and other counties here. Is that kind of part of the story here? Is it it's very close to other counties?
Yeah, and you know, one county moved to another county, and originally we were part of Pike County.
Yeah.
And then Marion County, and then in 1835 we became Shelby County. But there were people here in Shelby County before 1835, and one of those I mentioned.
Yeah,
earlier.
Tell me who the first person, the first white settler, I guess, came.
The first white settler came in the fall of 1831 with Obadiah Dickerson, and he's considered our first settler. But in 1818, Obadiah Dickerson came to Palmyra, and he helped found Palmyra, and he was also the postmaster. But prior to coming to Palmyra, he was in Pike County, Missouri. So he has had connections.
He had itchy feet, huh?
Yeah,
he had move around.
Connections with three different counties and helped form them. And he is buried in our county.
Well, at the state capitol, there's an interesting story about when they were drawing the lines for Shelby County. Most counties fight over territory and turf. Like, they want, you know, this township in their county and other. There was a representative named William Howe from Monroe County that wanted to put more Shelby County into Shelby County because he wanted to keep the county seat of Monroe County in Paris. So he pushed it hard and made a deal where Shelby County would actually take more of Monroe County so Paris would be centrally located. Interesting how those lines are drawn. There's always some story about somebody that owned a farm or somebody that didn't like somebody that takes a history and, like, what's the old saying, all politics is local? If you're from Paris, Missouri, you can probably thank your courthouse on Representative William Howe giving away a portion of your county is there. Now, when it was settled, there's a lot of grass plains here, right? This was kind of a prairie area that wasn't too heavily timbered, had a lot of prairie on it, and probably good for farming, right?
Right.
So what was, when you talk about agriculture here, what was some of the earlier crops that folks grew when they first moved here?
A lot of tobacco. In the beginning, and Shelbina was a tobacco producing area and shipped out a lot of tobacco.
Now we'll have to get this straight off the top. Isaac Shelby was quite an American hero. He was a general. He was a governor, the first governor of Kentucky. Speaking of guys that like to start things, it was part of his lands that made they want to start the state of Kentucky. This guy lived a life. Revolutionary War, War of 1812. He's in the Battle of Kings Mountain in North Carolina during the Revolutionary War. First governor of Kentucky. He actually declined President Monroe to be the Secretary of War. But his last thing, he arbitrated the Jackson Purchase of the Chickasaw Lands Tribe. He was the arbitrator of such. And he had this great quote that went on to become a motto of Kentucky. And we use it, we associate it with some wars after him. But it's united we stand, divided we fall. Is attributed to him. Now, obviously not about the Civil War, but that would come to very much probably inspire a young Kentuckian named Abraham Lincoln. But the last name Shelby is almost every place Kentuckian settled has a Shelby something. Here you have Shelby County,
yes.
But then if you're not from this part of the state, you might not get it right. Shelbina is the town on the road. Shelbyville is the town just a little bit off the road where the courthouse is, right?
Right, yeah.
Now, the centrally located, obviously, is Shelbyville is the centrally located spot. Is there ever any thought about moving that courthouse around a little bit?
Has been in the past, but it never got anywhere.
The old courthouse, it burnt in, I think it was 1891. And then they started construction of the present courthouse then. I'm sure it took 2 or 3 years, but it's a fantastic building.
Oh,
and, you know, it's been kept up very well since then. And we try to make sure that the inside and the outside is maintained so we can have it for another 100 years if possible.
You know what's interesting is your first courthouse, as I said, was built in 1839, cost $4,000, burned down. Like so many courthouses, you hardly find a county that didn't lose all their records and things to fire at some point.
Right, right.
This one was built a little bit sturdier material. The first one was let for bonds of $25,000, built the whole thing. I guess you couldn't even remodel a room probably for that now.
These
days, but it is a beautiful, beautiful building.
It is. We've done quite a bit of work. I've been a commissioner there now for 12 years, and we try to maintain it, like I said, and we spend money on it, and we want it to really look nice for the people of Shelby County and the people that come to visit.
Absolutely. Well, let's talk about Major Dickinson. He had a lot to do with the early part of the thing of Shelby County. He was the first postmaster. He was a state rep. It was an interesting thing when you talk about how people came to settle here. When you look at the general trends in Missouri, and I want to ask you, if you go to southern Missouri, you're going to see tons of Kentucky and Tennessee. You go to extreme southwest Missouri, you're going to see a lot of Arkansas. Folks come up the Arkansas River through there. St. Louis was sort of so old and such a diverse place, it's hard to really, there's no real overwhelming trend. There's different groups. North Missouri seemed like there was people that settled here that were maybe second or third generation from Europe. Whereas in the other parts of the state, you're fourth and fifth generation before you moved over. There was a lot of early immigrants that came to North Missouri. What was the original type of, was it German? Who were some of the original settlers here, and how far removed were they from Europe?
In the beginning, yeah. It was the Kentuckians and the Virginians that came to Shelby County.
Mm-hmm.
And they came up in Tyler Fork Township and settled. And then over a period of decades, then became into more in the central part of the state or the county.
And so when you saw more, when people came in, where you have a large French contingent, a large German contingent. I know this part of the state is known for a large German population, but...
Well, Bethel was settled in 1844 as a German communal society.
There's a couple things I always like to ask folks. Commissioner, how'd your family come to settle here, and how long have they been here?
Well, we actually grew up in Franklin County, outside of St. Louis, and a couple of my brothers and I moved here back in the 70s, and we've been here ever since, and a lot of our family still remains in Franklin County, out around Washington, Missouri. So, but we kind of came up here visiting and that, and we liked the area so well that we decided to just move up here. So we got jobs here, and we've been here 30-plus years now, and we just think the world of Shelby County.
Ms. Brumball, how long have you lived here, and how did your family come to settle here?
I've lived here my entire life, and my great-great-grandparents were part of Bethel.
Mm-hmm.
They were not colonists, but they lived outside Bethel. So I'm German descent.
And what part of the county you live in?
Northeast.
Ma'am, how'd you come to live here in Shelby County?
Well, my in-laws purchased a farm in 1967 and moved here. And then we moved the 14th of February 1974 and built a house in the country. And we've been here ever since. And we came from Logan County, Illinois, Lincoln.
Oh, okay. So. You bet. There was a particular group of settlers that gained a lot of notoriety early on. There was a lady named Miss Holliday. She was a widow and brought 6 sons with her. One of them was William Holliday. He became a state rep, a judge, a soldier in the Union Army. Quite a well-known group, but he might have been the most influential. Once they set up, once they decided there was going to be a Shelby County, the state set up a commission. These commissions are always interesting because they don't pick people from throughout the state's history. They never picked anybody from the county. They would pick a commission of 3 people from 3 different counties to pick where the county seat was. I guess it was to keep you, keep everybody a little honest, I suppose. For Marion County, they picked Elias Kinchlow. From Lewis County, they picked James Lay. And from Balls County, which I think the name of that has changed, they picked Joseph Hardy. Then they kind of wanted to pick a central location. In northern Missouri, the courthouses are extremely well appropriated. Close, like, even you go up to Scotland County, Memphis is right within a mile of this geographic center. When they picked Shelbyville, they were trying to get close to the middle. How close would they get, Commissioner?
I would say the center would be about 2 miles to the south of Shelbyville.
That's pretty good.
And a little bit west. So, yeah, right on, really, you know, when you're trying to do something like that. So
they in their charge, they said they wanted to be a half-day's horse ride from any part of the county. So you come, pay your taxes, and go back and be home by dark, you know.
Right. They doubled on the hill up there, so it's a very good location.
Now, where they built the courthouse and everybody can go see, is that the same place where the other one burnt? They built it right on top of it?
Yes, it was.
That's interesting, yeah, because it is just, I mean, the trees around it just lays perfect.
Right.
We got to see it when it was in the fall and the trees were turning. It was nice.
Yeah, we're pretty proud of our trees.
So the first county court, though, could not be held there in Shelbyville because there wasn't anything there yet. It was held over at the home of W.B. Broughton.
Broughton.
How you say that? Say that slow for me so I can get it right.
Broughton.
Broughton, and that was in Oakdale, right?
Oakdale, and there's a lot of Broughton still in Oakdale.
Is that right? Now, whereabouts Oakdale from Shelbyville?
It would be mostly east and a little bit north. Yeah.
So it's a little bit off probably, the highway north?
Yeah, probably about 5 miles away from Shelbyville.
When folks want to find us, there's a bunch of different ways to get here, but if he's coming up from St. Louis, you'd go up, like, you're going to Hannibal, turn on 36, right?
Mm-hmm.
Now, and if he's coming up from central Missouri, there's probably a bunch of different ways you go, but you get to Highway 36 and come. How far are we from the highway that goes up to Hannibal? 61, right?
Yeah, we're about 39 miles from Hannibal.
That's right.
So, but then you would come up Highway 15 from Mexico, Missouri,
mm-hmm.
If you were coming from the Columbia area.
Sure. So the first court they put together, they had Judge H. McBride, and the sheriff was Robert Duncan. An interesting court. Commissioner, tell me about your court today. Now, obviously, folks that are listening, if you listen to this podcast, you know that the original name of a county commission was a county court. They did all sorts of functions. Today, they're called county commissions, but it's the same thing.
Yeah, we have three county commissioners, the presiding commissioner, the whole county votes on the presiding commissioner, and then we have an eastern and a western commissioner. We have two new ones that have been here just 2 years, and I've been here 12 years, and we work together really well. We make some pretty important decisions for the county and the people that live in the county, and we kind of feel like we're touching everybody's lives a little bit. We affect the different things, the county roads and the bridges that we build, and you know, we try to do emphasize on getting businesses to come into the county.
Mm-hmm.
So we work with Wendy on economic development, and a small rural county like this, it's hard to get businesses to come into, but we definitely continue to try, and we work a lot on trying to keep our local businesses here. And,
sure.
We do have several businesses that expand, and along with that comes some job opportunities. So everything's going pretty well, really, for Shelby County.
But tell me about the politics of the county. I would assume being in rural Missouri, there'd be a trend that's becoming more Republican, I guess?
Yes, I would say back, I'd say 20 years ago, I would think that probably 75% of the county was Democrat.
Mm-hmm.
And
about what most rural Missouri, right? I mean, right. About 20 years in the 90s,
right.
You saw the first courthouse start to slide right. A little bit to the Republican side, and that's kind of, I guess, just picked up steam since, right?
The county officials, we have 12 that are Democrat and 2 that are Republican. Mm-hmm. So that part of the politics in the county courthouse has pretty well remained Democrat now for a long time.
I think it's got to do with the fact that folks know them, and it's not,
right.
Nobody's voting on guns and abortion at the courthouse, right?
Right.
And
so right.
If you have a person that does a good job and is well-liked, they overlook a party, even though they might vote different at the top
right.
of the thing.
Right. But the last couple of elections, it seemed like the Republican Party has kind of taken a stronghold with the voting in the county.
Mm-hmm.
More probably 65% Republican versus 35% Democrat, and you know, things change, and yeah, he may come back to work for the Senate again sometime, but right now the Republican Party has pretty stronghold here in town.
You always chuckle at the Capitol. I was a young man. The current, I guess not the current speaker, he's resigned, but the previous speaker, Todd Richardson's father, gave me a job one time, helping him, and you could, back then the Democrats were, had all the, just like the Republicans now, and you could just tell they thought they'd have him forever. There's never been change, and you can almost see that now. I mean, it's just, it's a normal thing about life, is when you get in those jobs, and you get a big majority, and you don't know anybody that was ever in the minority, you don't relate to, you don't think about it. But the one thing that is certain is change. And it's an interesting part about Shelby County how it's a little more independent. You know, you don't see it. The county court makeup is very different from other counties and kind of bucks the trend a little bit.
Right. You know, I personally have many of my friends are Republican, and a lot of my family's Republican anymore. And you know, we get along great. We don't have any problems. Yeah. We don't talk politics that much. But what we do, we keep it civil, and everybody needs to work together and get along, you know, and not make such a big deal out of some of these issues. Everybody's basically thinking alike. It's just some people want to associate with one party versus the other party.
You know, I assume I probably have more personal friends that I assume are Democrats. I don't really, you know, I don't really sort them that away, but I do. We are ever, this will air Thanksgiving weekend, and so. Uh-huh. If by chance my father, who loves Donald Trump like I love cake, is listening to this, and my wife, who hates Donald Trump like I hate the Cubs, are listening to this, this is how things can be. People can not fight. I may actually clip this and play it for both of them at Thanksgiving Day because I get tired of it. I mean, I like Trump fine, but I don't care. I mean, I'm much more concerned about the Cardinals than I am Trump, and they neither of them. They have very passionate thoughts on him, so it's a funny thing.
Right.
Kind of talking about going forward, there was, before we get into the Civil War, I want to talk about the railroad. We always on this show talk about the three things that always change stuff. When the co-ops bring out electricity to farms, Civil War, and the railroad. So the railroad coming through, that was maybe the first time that Shelvina and Shelbyville may have been at odds, right? I mean, originally I was reading where the railroad was going to come through Shelbyville, but the train was a little tougher. So then it coming through Shelvina and really changed the layout of the land from an economic development standpoint, right? I mean, that's...
Absolutely. A lot of men had moved their businesses over to Shelbyville, and that information was kept secret. And then when it was let out that Shelvina was going to get the railroad, they sold out and moved to Shelvina. And one of those was David Morgan, who purchased the land right across the street here. Manufacturing.
Any bad blood come out of that?
No, just moved over here.
Yeah,
just,
you got to go where you got to go.
So, right.
Now, Highway 36 kind of followed along that railroad line, right?
Right.
But it was the way it was read is that it just was cheaper to come through the flatter ground in Shelvina. It wasn't against Shelbyville. It just was cheaper to come this way, so that's what they did.
Right.
Why would they expect them not to?
Yeah.
I mean, what was the? I wonder why they would expect them not to.
Well, I think they wanted to come through the, you know, Shelbyville, the county seat.
Mm-hmm.
But then, you know, the economics of it changed it straight through Shelvina, and that's what started all the little towns around on the highway there.
There was a railroad spur from Shelvina to Shelbyville, and then, what,
1908.
And 1907,
yeah.
And that's where it ended, I think.
Yeah, and then it went on to Novelty.
Did it? Okay.
And that all dissolved in 1938.
Right. Didn't know if he was aware of that.
No, I didn't. That's interesting. No, that's a nice way to maybe tie everybody together easier. Let's talk about a little more. We were talking about politics a minute ago. The election of 1860. It's an interesting thing at Shelby County. You know, in Northeast Missouri, there's a general trend around the state that you can chart, whether it's federal politics, state politics. And in Missouri, didn't really vote Democrat until the 80s, or didn't vote Republican at the federal level, then the congressional and state levels around the turn of the millennium, and then the courthouses began to flip after that, have just become more and more Republican. Northeast Missouri, Pike County and places, we used to think of ourselves as a bellwether ticket-splitting state. I'm not sure we really are anymore, but Northeast Missouri didn't get the mill, and they still are. It's an interesting sign of independence that you don't see in Southern Missouri. In Southeast Missouri, when it flipped, and now it's radically one way. The cities are radically one way. It's an interesting part of the Northeast Missouri. It's really, even in Northwest Missouri, it's pretty much that way. But Northeast Missouri, you have the folks that they don't follow. There's not a little bit of how Missouri used to be, probably, from a voting standpoint. You still are. But when we look back at the election of 1860, there was a guy, Bell of the Peace Party, or the Know-Nothing Party. He actually won Shelby County with 702 votes. Douglas, the Democrat, the Northern Democrat, had 476, which is odd since he was from Illinois, just, you know, not far away. Breckinridge, the Southern Democrats, had 293, and Abraham Lincoln got 90 votes, got then, and then kind of a telling thing, a guy we'll talk about a little bit more later, John McAfee was the state representative.
John McAfee.
McAfee, John like McAfee. The internet defender,
and
right?
His father-in-law was Obadiah Dickerson.
Is that right?
Yeah.
All politics is local, right?
Yeah.
Well, John McAfee, it's interesting. In that election of 1860, everybody knew there was going to be a problem. There was problems, storm clouds on the horizon. And in Missouri, they were going to have a constitutional convention. It was pretty well understood they were going to have a thing. And now they promised folks they wouldn't succeed. They would put that up to vote of the people if they wanted to, but they were going to have a convention. So pretty much that was when every county had their own rep. You know, every county had a rep to put up. And every county pretty much could vote on, do you want your rep to be a pro-secessionist rep, representative, and have a vote on secession or not? Well, John McAfee was an ardent secessionist, very vocal about his views on secession, and he ended up winning the election in 1860. He was actually Speaker of the House, quite an honor to have right from Shelby County. But we'll take that into our break. We'll come back. We'll talk about the Civil War in Shelby County after this.
We are Missouri Farm Bureau Insurance, and we're for the Missouri way of life. We're for worrying less about the what-ifs and more about the why-nots. We're for checking off your bucket list and then making a new one. For starting a family, a business, a tradition. And if you find yourself starting over, we're here for that too. We're for building a life in Missouri and then going out and living it. And when it comes to making sure everything you've built is protected, we're for you. We are Missouri Farm Bureau Insurance, and we've got Missouri covered for life.
Welcome back to Showing Missouri, the history of Missouri one county at a time. This week we're in Shelby County, Missouri, Highway 36 in northeastern Missouri. We're here with Glenn Egan, the presiding commissioner. Thank you for staying with us, sir.
You're welcome.
Wendy Brumbaugh, the Shelby County Director of Economic Development. Thank you for having us. And Kathleen Wilhelm, the head of the Historical Society here, the incredibly well-organized Historical Society. Thank you for the hospitality today.
Thank you very much. Glad to be here.
We're here in downtown Shelby, and we always want to thank our sponsors, the Missouri Farm Bureau, Missouri Association of Counties, CFM Insurance, and the Missouri Association of Electric Co-ops for letting us come and tell you the history of Missouri each week, one county at a time. There's a lot of folks in the history books that will say Shelby County was a very strong Union county. While there was a big divide in the county, I've always found it an interesting thing throughout Missouri history. If the folks say there was an even divide, it was probably a rebel county because, you know, whoever wins gets a lot more followers as time goes on. And then the rebel army had the forage, which made no friends amongst the population. The Union army had supplies sent from the East Coast, but the rebel army had to, whatever they found, they had to eat, which no one appreciates when 400 men come and eat everything on your land and leave. You become not as sympathetic to the cause. Shelby County had a bunch of strong, some of the leading people we've already talked about and others were very pro-Union. John Benjamin, Joseph Irwin, Alex McMurtry, William Holliday, we'd mentioned before, J.M. Collier. They were all very prominent Union supporters, although the election results would show you that they favored someone else. In the election in the census of 1860, there were 724 slaves in Shelby County. Wendy, when you talk about the economics of Shelby County, you got to talk agriculture, right?
Absolutely, yeah.
Dating back to then, you would have had some tobacco and some crops that would have had facilitated that, right?
Yeah.
It's interesting. You go a little further to North Missouri and you need a lot of cattle and things like that. They weren't if they were a Confederate sympathizer, it was not because of slavery, because slavery really is not conducive to cattle farming.
Yeah.
Today, what's the agriculture situation like here? What's the main crops and what are some of the businesses that focus on?
I would say soybeans and corn, some wheat, but the majority of the economic drive is agriculture in Shelby County.
Yeah, and dating back to then, you had a unit organized, Captain Hughes, under the Union. They fought in Monroe City, Hannibal, and all over. I got Miss Kathleen. When you do talk about the history of Shelby County, do folks talk about it as a Union County, a Confederate County, or a divided county?
I think it's divided, but it leaned more south, basically around Honeywell, mm-hmm. Lincoln, that area, and then some of the, you know, the town of Shelbina was kind of more leaned towards the Union side. But everybody got put upon during the war.
Interesting. I think when you look back, there was a couple of pretty good Union strongholds in Bolivar and in Rolla, because that's where the railroad ended at the time. So the Union would bring a lot of business in, and everybody did a lot of business with the Union Army and the soldiers, because they would ship their goods there. That's where it would stop. And I think where there was a railroad stop, you had a few folks making money off the war, and it kind of changed that. And you, almost all that money would have been from the Union side. From the Confederates, they sort of took it. Yeah.
And the Confederates burned a lot of bridges, and mm-hmm. that really ired the Union, because they needed to keep those railroads moving, and they burned bridges like down there in Honeywell.
Did it also, I noticed like in Webster County, Missouri, when we were there, at the beginning of the war, they were very, very pro-Confederate. But after, you know, foraging and after burning bridges, the locals were like, well, this is, you know, we don't want to be part of this anymore, we're out. Because they were having to resort to some of those kind of guerrilla terrorist tactics, and that doesn't set well with people who are just trying to live their lives. Maybe they would be sympathetic if there was a vote, they'd vote Confederate, but over time they got spoiled. Did you notice any of that here as time went on in the war?
It seemed to me, you know, reading all the history, nobody was exempt from being injured from this war.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you know, houses were burned in the night. You know,
the bushwhackers were...
The bushwhackers came, and then the Union officers, you know, killed a lot of soldiers, you know, that, you know, it was not an easy time to be in Shelby County.
As time went by, after the Battle of Wilson's Creek, there was a big, and with a Confederate victory, there was a big surge in momentum for the Confederates. It was one of the first times they thought they could win. And when you talk about the Civil War in northern Missouri, there's a couple names that stand out more than any other. Colonel Porter was the main Confederate person. Now, there were some bushwhackers and what have you, but Porter was the main person that led Confederate troops up in this part of the state. After the Battle of Wilson's Creek, he recruited 80 folks from Shelby County right away, and he went on, and unfortunately, that's about the time in late 1862 when he just got a fresh amount of recruits from here, that he went and fought the Battle of Kirksville, which was his undoing.
And there's a picture of the widow of Henry Adams went to the Battle of Kirksville.
On the Confederate side, with Porter?
On the Confederate side. He left his plow and went up there, and that was his first, last, and only battle.
Well, that was...
Left five little children and her expecting the next.
Oh. But that was... if you talk about the organized resistance in the North for the Confederates, the Battle of Kirksville was a rout. Porter had been very successful winning some of the biggest battles that were won, period, for the South.
Yeah.
But the Battle of Kirksville was kind of his undoing, and he brought a lot of Shelby County folks with him.
Yeah, and a lot of Monroe County people mm-hmm. had joined up, and that was the beginning of the end of Colonel Porter.
We'll get to the Battle of Kirksville when we go over and tell you about the history of Adair County. But as time went on, there was some very interesting things. Ulysses S. Grant came through here. And he had some very interesting observations. He loved to go. He loved nature, and so he would go on some long walks. And while he was doing, he went on a scavenging or a foraging look. They were trying to catch people that were foraging for the South, and he was doing some reconnaissance. And he would like to go with his troops sometimes, just because he loved to see the countryside. And he talked about how it was there that they ran on a couple Confederates. And there was maybe half a dozen of them, and there was just him and the other person who was doing reconnaissance. And he, at the first time, they saw that these were Union soldiers with their bright suits. And he said, it was the first time in my life I realized, I've always thought, I'd always felt inferior as a soldier because of how afraid I was of war. He said, I never shirked from my duty, but I had an honest fear of war. And he said, it was the first time in my life to watch those six men surrender to the two of us, just because of our uniforms. I realized that the enemy had just as much fear in his heart as I did in mine. And in his memoirs, that I carried that lesson with me that he learned in northern Shelby County, outside Shelbyville. He carried that lesson with him throughout his life, that while he was maybe afraid, other people were afraid too. I think that's an interesting thing. You think of Grant as this wildly successful general, but in reality, he learned that, yeah, war's scary, and he was afraid too. And I always thought that was an interesting quote, that he was right here in the county when he...
I think he brought his son Frederick here until the war heated up.
Yeah.
And then he sent him back to Galena.
Well, and he went on to from here to Mexico.
Yeah.
And that's about as far west as he went in his travels, but it was part of, I think, when you look on later in history, Grant always had a very big fondness for St. Louis and for Missouri. Joseph Pulitzer, it's funny, Joseph Pulitzer was known as a government sellout publisher because he was a German, so he was very ardently pro-Union, and Grant was serving under General Lyon and saw this paper that was crazy pro-Union, and Pulitzer did all the printing under Grant, which Grant, as a president, maybe didn't go down as highly rated as a general, but he had his favorites, and one of them was Joseph Pulitzer, who we all think is this wonderful journalist today. The interesting part, though, going back, I've always felt like, you know, in Southeast Missouri, we're a bit hellraisers, but in Northeast Missouri, it's a different type of, I don't know if you call it stubbornness or just principle. It's a different, we run a little hot down in Southeast Missouri. There's more, it's almost like we run like a gas-powered engine or an airplane engine. It's almost like a diesel engine up here. There is a bit of a, I'm from Missouri, you got to show me type part of this. And part of this is interesting. In 1866, there's radical Republicans come in, and they come into the state legislature too. And you had to swear an oath to do anything, to be a doctor, to be anything in the world. You had to swear some radical Union oath. Well, General Blair, who was also Governor Blair for the Union, he wouldn't swear it just because he didn't believe in it. And he was a Northeast Missouri guy. But what was interesting is you go through here, you had to swear an oath to be a preacher. You couldn't preach the gospel without swearing this oath. And in the entire state, they had 12 preachers who were indicted for preaching the gospel without swearing an oath, and by far the most of anywhere in the state. There's just an interesting part of Northeast Missouri that they don't just follow the crowd, and that kind of dig your heels in, and it's not showy, it's not ostentatious, but it's determined. And I think you can, it's funny, you look back at history, you can kind of see why maybe just because they think they ought to vote all one way, they don't. They kind of pick each race on its merits. It goes back to things like they weren't going to take an oath they didn't want to take to preach the gospel.
I can understand that, knowing the people here.
But that's back.
Yeah.
We have all those oaths here at the Historical Society.
Oh, wow.
And the preachers and the teachers had to sign those. And I got those from the courthouse. We copied them there. So I think they're on our website.
Oh, is that right? So folks, yeah. Give me that web address.
Web address is www.shelbymogenweb.org.
Well, that's interesting. I mean, today you think that's insane, and it was insane then too, but I mean, folks did it just to get along, right? But yeah. not everywhere, right? Not here. They were just not going to, they weren't going to do that. That is an interesting aspect. Let's talk about the history of the churches. There's several different denominations wanted to evangelize here. Going back, they started three Presbyterian congregations in 1859. The Baptists had their own folks that came through a little earlier than that, in the late 1830s. But the first actual built churches go back to Reverend H. James in Oakdale. In 1836, he put together a group. What is the historical denominational background of the county?
There were a lot of Presbyterians in the beginning. There are no Presbyterian churches now. A lot of Methodist churches. That was the predominant church in the beginning. And then they're kind of dwindling now. There was quite a few Catholic churches. And they're, I think we're down to two.
We're down to one in Shelby County.
One in Shelby County.
Yeah. And then Paris has one in Monroe County. Yeah. And so there are several Catholic families here in Shelby County, and I am a Catholic that goes to the St. Mary's here, and it seems like the Catholic faith is really staying about steady here in the county. I don't think we've lost or gained that many, but overall it's going really well for the Catholics here.
Talk about the schools. There's several homeschools that popped up. But again, you saw one, the Bacon School in 1838, in around the Oakdale area. What is the, tell them about the schools today here in Shelby County.
Well, we have two. There's a North Shelby District and a South Shelby.
Now, would that be Shelbyville and Shelbyna?
Mm-hmm.
Gotcha.
Well, yeah, and then the smaller towns.
Mm-hmm.
But the line is north and south. Strong schools, very good schools, a lot of support, family support. And then there are homeschools here in Shelby County also. I'm not sure how many you all know. I don't know how many homeschools, but... and then we have Heartland, that's also in Shelby County.
Is that a private school or public school?
It was settled as a school for disadvantaged children, or children who came from disadvantaged homes,
I guess,
or had issues or problems. And so it has quite a few.
I'd like to talk about that a little bit. Charles Sharp, he's the founder of Ozark National Life Insurance Company, and he had a calling from God to help people with problems, whether it be drug problems or other kind of problems. And so he started building a community back about 20-some years ago, about 21 years probably, and it has grown into a small city over there. And unfortunately, Charlie passed away probably a little over a year ago. But there's probably in the vicinity of 500 people that reside there.
That's a great story.
And he's helped a lot of young people and many adults with drug abuse. And he's turned their lives around. He's installed great faith in these people. And it's amazing to see what he's done up there. I'm a big believer in what Charlie's done up there.
Sure.
For a lot of people, and not only in Missouri, but around the world, people have come there, and it's just really neat to go over there and visit and see what's really going on over there.
Yeah, that's an amazing thing.
It is.
So tell me about this Bethel Colony. You mentioned it was an old German colony, kind of a commune. Is it still around today? What happens with it?
In the early 70s, a group of people formed historic Bethel German Colony. And it started with a festival, and really the whole idea was to preserve the colony, preserve the buildings, some of the original colony buildings. And yes, we're still very active today. We still have a board, an elected 12-member board, and we have festivals and events. We try to go back to the tradition. Christmas in Bethel is coming up, so we have colony homes on tour and decorated in traditional fashion.
Well, I'm a German myself, so we're just coming off the Oktoberfest season. Is there an Oktoberfest?
There used to be. We do not have an Oktoberfest any longer.
I celebrate Oktoberfest all year round, probably too much.
Yeah.
I'm a fan. Well, that's an awesome thing. So if you wanted to come see that, you'd come up to Shelbyna on 36 and you go north of Shelbyville. How far north of Shelbyville would you go?
5 miles.
That's awesome. We will come back and talk about some of the more notable folks. Yes, we will talk Norm Stewart when we come back here on Show Missouri, the history of Missouri, one county at a time.
Here's something worth shouting.
From the hilltops to the rooftops, you're a member of an electric cooperative.
That means you have a say.
A voice in how your co-op is run.
In what's best for the community.
Power to the people.
For the people.
From the people.
Doesn't that sound good?
Learn more about the power of your co-op membership
at togetherwesave.com.
We are Missouri's electric cooperatives. Learn more at membersfirst.coop today.
Welcome back to our last segment here on Shelby, Missouri, the history of Missouri, one county at a time. Wendy Brumbaugh, the Shelby County Director of Economic Development, thank you for staying with us.
Thank you.
Ms. Kathleen Wilhelm, thank you for the hospitality here in this historical society here in Shelbyna. Appreciate it.
Thank you.
And Glenn Egan, the presiding commissioner, thank you very much for having us here in Shelby County and talking about the history of the county. Let's talk about a few folks that are very notable people going through. Let's talk about, there was G.W. Humphrey was the president of the Senate back in 1909. Pretty big honor. Morris Osborne was the Speaker of the House in 1941. Do people still have any recollection of those folks? Or is that?
I do not.
That
not,
comes
not
and goes.
Casey Osborne would be the one, because she was in the Olympics in, what, 1931, 1932?
Now, what sport?
She was in several schools. We've got a file over there.
I believe that. If y'all was here looking at this right now, you would believe her when she said she had a file.
We have a file on all the prominent people in Shelby County.
So John McAfee was the first Speaker of the House from Shelby County.
Correct.
Ardent secessionist. At some point in the war, he was not a soldier, but he was very vocal, and he was captured. And it says here that the Union General Hulbert took him prisoner, and they made him dig trenches to do hard labor. Apparently, he liked to talk, and they were awful mean to him. What should folks know about him?
Well, John McAfee was, very prominent in our county in politics, and he did, get on the Confederate side. And during the war, after he was captured, he was some of the officers, the Union officers, wanted to tie him on the train and send him to Macon. And the engineer said he would not start the train because there'd be a lot of shooting. But that was the kind of activities that went on here.
And after the war, he left the county.
He left before the war. He left during the war and went to Quincy, Illinois, where he spent the rest of his life.
Now, see, that strikes me as odd. If you were this guy and you were having all this trouble, I don't think you'd move to a Union state and live, but maybe he got all his politicking out of him.
Got
his fill.
Yeah.
Tell me about John L. Oliver.
John L. Oliver was born in 1820, and so he was born prior to the beginning of the state of Missouri, and he lived to be 108 years old and died here in Shelby County in 1928. And his wife died a few years after that, and she was 100. But he came here, and he lived his probably the last half of his life here in Shelbina. And
that half is a long time.
Is a long time. And we have pictures of some of the old men. We've got a picture from the 1920s. And there's like 20 old men sitting there on the park bench. We have a lot of pictures there in our museum, so if anybody wants to come and look at our picture collection, they're more than welcome. The museum is open just about every day. Check our website at www.shelbymogenweb.org.
You can come work for the Missouri Times. I like working on that website. Speaking of business, I heard Sam Walton spent some time here.
Yes, he did.
Yeah, Sam was here, and during this time, he was made an Eagle Scout because he saved a young man from drowning.
Well, what's the story behind that? He was the lifeguard was walking by.
No, the boys were out swimming in the lake or in the river. And I think it was...
Now, what brought him to Shelby County?
I think economics.
They lived here?
Yeah, they lived here down on Spruce Street in a nice little house with a long...
Here in Shelbina?
Yeah, here in Shelbina. And some of the Sam Walton Museum people were here a couple of years ago, and we toured the house, and we gave them all the information we had on Sam Walton when he was here in Shelbina.
Now, it's an interesting thing. I always felt like, see, I'm from Papa Bluff, so we have a mall. It's just Walmart in Papa Bluff. I always felt like Walmart had an intuitive understanding of small-town America. And I guess maybe he got that, honestly, by living here, right?
Living here, yeah. I think his father worked out a lot, and he's had a lot of influence from his mother. And then he also, trying to think of a lady he dated.
How many years was he here?
Isabel Hutcherson. He dated her for several years, and she just died in Clarence. But I think...
Well, I'm sure she died with a lot of love in her life, and probably not as much money as she'd had if she'd have married Sam Walton. Commissioner, tell me about the person I think everyone listening to this will know the absolute most about, the famous Mizzou basketball coach, Norm Stewart.
Norm Stewart grew up in Shelbyville. His dad owned a service station there. He was a very tall gentleman, and he was a very good basketball player for Shelbyville High School. And they won second in the state, I'm pretty sure. I don't know if that was his senior year. Wendy, do you remember? It was his senior year?
It was in 1952, because we had the trophy next door.
All right. And Norm went on to become a very good high school player and also a very good college player, as well as I think he played a little NBA. And he went on to coach at a college, ended up at University of Missouri, and he won several Big Eight tournaments down there, and he won over 600 games down there. So he was a everybody in Chattanooga loved Norm Stewart, and they still do.
Sure.
Still think the world of him. So even though he's moved to California, he gets back here maybe once every year or two, and we all really enjoy seeing him when he does return.
Absolutely. He is a legendary Missourian.
Yeah. And we have a big sign in the courthouse yard with some information about Norm. So
yeah, saw that.
We're proud of that.
Ms. Wilhelm, is there any other famous folks that spent some time here in Shelby County?
Well, we had quite a few. We have a list, and it's all on our website.
Give us the name. I know you want to. I respect it.
www.shelbymogenweb.org. And one of our more famous people was Ralph Eugene Blodgett, and he was the first Rhodes Scholar in the state of Missouri in 1904. And he was unanimously chosen from the whole state of all the college students. So that's quite an honor.
Sure.
And then we've had two other Rhodes Scholars from Shelby County. So I think that just speaks a lot of our education system to have those, you know, Rhodes Scholars, you know, come out of
sure.
Us. And they all came out of the Shelbina system. So.
Well, let's talk about the business here. To me, the third thing that always matters in a county's development throughout the state is when the co-ops come and brought electricity to the farms. This, I guess, a lot of Shelby County is in the Macon County co-op? The Macon Electric co-op?
Probably a lot of them, but some are in the Palmyra REC and Lewis County. Yeah. We do have a combination.
Conversion. Well, the Macon Electric co-op was founded in 1935. 4,300 places they serve, almost 3,000 miles of line. Tell me how important the co-ops are to the economic development of the area.
Oh my goodness, they're a tremendous impact economically. I can remember my mom and dad getting electricity. I always had electricity, but they talked about it, and that was in 1950. So when you think back, you know, that many years, it's almost amazing to me to think how far we've come in that amount of time. But without the co-ops, it would be a tremendous strain economically on families.
No doubt.
The city of Shelbina is the only part of Shelby County that is not part of a co-op.
And a municipal?
Yes. So, you know, it is the three co-ops that come into the county. We try to work with them on economic development. We just had a meeting a couple weeks ago at the Macon Electric Co-op and talked about what's happened in the past and the things that need to happen in the future to make this part of Northeast Missouri a better place to live.
So. What are some of the things that are priorities right now in Shelby County as far as economic development?
Taking care of the businesses that we have and making sure that we support the shop local. Of course, we'd all like to see industry come into Shelby County. Mm-hmm. But as the director, I think we need to focus on taking care of what we have and making sure that their needs are met. Agriculture, I said, is a big economic drive, and so we want to make sure that our producers are taken care of. We have a strong FSA. Is that right? FSA? Farm? Whatever that is.
Yeah,
Farm
sure.
Service Agency. And so I think there are a lot of programs that help the farmers and the producers.
Probably one of the biggest challenges is the infrastructure. You know, the secondary roads in the county, they definitely could be better. And some of even the primary roads really need to be updated. The bridges, we have 22 bridges in the county that are 50 years or older. So it takes a lot of money. It costs from $200,000 to $500,000 to build a bridge over these. Even these smaller rivers here in the county.
Mm-hmm.
And it takes us a while. I've been a commissioner for 12 years, and we've built about 8 bridges in that time period. So pretty proud of the bridges that we have built.
When you say they're under 50 years, you'll get them caught up. But
yeah,
then the ones you build will be 50 years old.
So. Yeah, exactly. So, you know, we're doing the best we can with the funds we have.
So the first newspaper published here was F.M. Dalton. It was the Shelbyville Spectator in 1853. Commissioner, tell them about the newspaper today.
We have the three towns. We have the Shelby County Herald that's located in Shelbyville, and the Clarence Courier, located in Clarence, owned by the same person. And then we have the Shelbina Weekly that's been here, I'd say 15 years, roughly, that Shelbina Weekly's been here. So we have a strong presence with smaller newspapers in the county. And most smaller counties are lucky to have one newspaper, and we're very fortunate to have three.
So. Sure. Before I ask my favorite question, I like to ask folks, I want to thank our sponsors, the Missouri Association of Counties, CFM Insurance, the Missouri Association of Electric Co-ops, and the Missouri Farm Bureau. If you're listening to this and you're in rural Missouri, you're not a Farm Bureau member, you ought to be. But let me ask you, Ms. Kathleen William, what would be, if you had somebody that could come to the county for the weekend or for the day, what would you show them? What should they know about Shelby County?
Well, first off, they could come to the Shelby County Historical
exactly.
Museum and Library. We have two buildings here on 107 and 109 South Center Street, and I'm usually here every day doing something. But we've been very fortunate, the community and people, give us requests, and so we're able to maintain our building. Mm-hmm. We've restored the building at 107 completely, and now we've restored this one and put it in tip-top shape.
Absolutely.
For a great library.
Ms. Wendy Bromo, what would you have somebody know about Shelby County if they came here?
Well, I'm probably partial to Bethel.
Sure.
So I would take them to Bethel and tell them the history and give them
at Christmas time, right?
At Christmas.
Is there a normal weekend, or is it all through the Christmas season? Folks can come up and check it out.
It's the first Sunday in December.
Nice. And how many folks come for that?
For anywhere from 10 to 100.
That's awesome.
Depends a lot on the weather.
Sure.
And that weekend, sometimes we can have ice or whatever. And that's where I would.
Commissioner, if you had your colleague Tom Wright from Miller County up here, what would you show him? What would you have him know about the county?
I think two things. The first would be the Shelbina Lake and the golf course. If the person comes here and likes to play golf, we have a beautiful golf course sits right on the lake. And the second thing, I think, would be the Heartland community. There's a lot to see over there, and really a lot of wonderful people.
Well, I want to thank you all very much for the hospitality here in Shelby County. So. Interesting, it might not be the only speaker of the Missouri House. They wanted to tie to the front of the train, but he probably got closer than most of them. I want to thank you very much for having me, the hospitality. I really appreciate it. There's a rich history here, and I will tell you, folks, if you are in like Missouri history, you need to put this on your list. This historical museum is one of the absolute best. They have, it's one thing to have a bunch of stuff. There's another thing to have it archived. Yeah, you should be very proud, and I'm sure the folks in the county are very proud to have not just a place where you can come look at things, a place you can come research your own family and actually be able to do it in an organized way. This is very impressive.
Thank you very much.
Thank you all for having me, and we will see you next week on Showing Missouri. We do the history of Missouri one county at a time. See you next week.